Right, y'all. I just want to take a quick second to talk about our sponsor, Sunbasket. I don't know if you know this about me, but I am not a big fan of grocery shopping or meal planning or anything that goes along with any of that. But I do very much care about eating healthy. But when you don't like to grocery shop or plan meals, it is really hard to cook healthy dinners for your family. And that's where Sunbasket comes in. They're a team of dietitians and chefs that design wholesome, nutritious, and delicious meal kits delivered to your door. Each week, you can choose from a brand new selection of quick and easy meal kit recipes with a wide variety of dietary options, plus dozens of snacks, salads, breakfast items, and more. And you can pick and choose from recipe options like vegetarian, Mediterranean, carb conscious, the list goes on. We just had orzo bowls with broccoli, sun-dried tomatoes, and pea stew, and it was delicious. My kids even liked them. I can't speak to Sunbasket more. I love them. Thanks to Sunbasket's commitments to clean ingredients and organic fresh produce, there's no easier way to eat your very, very best. You just have to go to sunbasket.com/queerfam today to save $120 across your first four deliveries. That's sunbasket.com/queerfam to save $120, y'all, across your first four deliveries, plus free shipping on your first order. Go do that. Get some healthy food. There you go. This episode is sponsored by Feather Snack. Okay, hold on, y'all. I have to tell you about something that my wife got us into and that my whole family is loving now. Brace yourselves. It's the Feather Snap Scout Smart Bird Feeder. Yes, I said bird feeder. This thing is so cool, and it offers a brand new way to connect with nature and learn about the birds right in your own backyard. Or if you're like us living in New York City, it's in your friend's backyard in the country, and you get to use the app connected to it to learn all the stuff. It's got this high resolution camera that connects to an app so you can check out a live stream from your feeder. You can take photos and videos of the birds that visit. You can ID the species using expert trained AI, and you can earn badges along the way. You can even, y'all, learn fun facts about hundreds of species. For example, did you know that American crows can recognize and remember people's faces? And they can even teach their young who's a friend and who's a foe? I know that now. Did you? Seriously, the Feather Snap Feeder is entertaining, it's educational, and it's just a whole bunch of fun for the whole family. Check them out today at feathersnapcam.com. That's feathersnapcam.com. This episode is brought to you by Lightstream, the nation's premier online consumer lender. Lightstream offers low-interest fixed-rate loans from $5,000 to $100,000 for practically any purpose. It's also brought to you by our newest Patreon members, Lara Carina Suarez. Oh my God, I hope I said that right. Heather Capello, and AJ Silverman. Thank you, all of you. I couldn't do this without you. I am so grateful to all of you for making this show a possibility.
The Queer Family Podcast. Love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
Hey, Teek.
Hey, Jamie.
Teek Milan is in the house to help me welcome everybody back for season fucking 11, bitches. Yes, this is our season premiere, season 11. We are back. We are almost at 200 episodes. We have had so many families full of queer content, and we're keeping going. We just keep on going. And Teek is back to help me out with this very first intro. So Teek, my friend, how are you?
I'm so good. So wait, 200 episodes. That's a lot of episodes. That's a lot of conversation.
It sure is. It really is. I can't even believe it. And I just re-released bonus archived episodes, like one, your first episode and all the friends who are coming back for season 11 to help me with these intros. I'm listening to all these old episodes and oh my God, man, we go through it.
Don't we though?
Don't
we? It ain't easy.
Oh my God, it's not.
Worth it though.
Yeah, it's worth it. It's worth it. But what's going on in your life, Teek? What's the happenings?
Let's see, what's new? Well, 2023 is here. I have a new girlfriend.
Ooh, congratulations.
Thank you. You know, I'm a serial monogamist.
Me too, Teague.
Are you?
Yes. I say that about myself all the time. I thought I made that up. Look at you.
No. Yeah, I'm a serial monogamous. I don't think I've been single for more than a year since I was like 20, and I'm in my 40s now.
Oh my God, same thing.
So it's a constant kind of thing for me. I tried the poly thing. Does not work for
doesn't
me.
Work
don't
for you.
Like it.
I don't think I could do it either. I don't think I could do it.
No, I tried. I'm like, I'm gonna kill everybody. So I can't do this. the way my jealousy is set up, I was like, I can't do this with any of you.
Yeah, it's not for me either. I mean, more power to you if you can.
But not for nothing though. But I think that's one of the cool things about queer people. Is that we reshape families, and we also like rethink what relationships and love and is supposed to look like. Yes. I know so many queer people who are in these like poly pan relationships, and everybody's just loving and swapping fluids. That's awesome, and it works for them, yeah. Right? But I think that we normalize this idea that we can have all kinds of different relationships.
Right.
For me, I don't know. Maybe I'm kind of just a little bit more vanilla. I just like good old monogamy. So anyway, I have a girlfriend. She's awesome. Her name is Rain. She lives in Virginia.
You deserve that. Things are going well there.
Yeah, things are going good. You know, it's been about a year. So, you know, still trying to learn each other's like quirks. You know, everybody has like their shit, you know, but she's great, you know, and I don't want to be out here in the street. I don't want to date. So I'm hoping I could just lock this down and just do this for a while. So it's nice. It's long distance. So we have like nice ebb and flow together, then apart. So, you know, it's going good.
I like it.
It's going good.
Good for you. Because if you listen to Teague's most recent episode from last season, you know that Teague recently underwent a divorce. And like in the very first episode with you, Teague, we were in the very beginnings of your relationship. Y'all have made the baby. Everything was going smooth. Then the next time we talked to you seasons later, it was divorce time.
Oh my God.
And you said my favorite thing of all times. You said, it sticks with me. The person you marry is not the person you divorce. Yes. So you went through that. And now we're in a different place now.
Yeah, in a different place. Married one person, divorced another. And now I am in court for custody of my child with a whole other version of this person. So it's bananas. So I think that's the big thing that's happening in my life. I am just fighting so hard for my child. Who would have thought that this is a whole 180? I mean, we did a TED talk. We did a fucking TED talk.
I know you and your ex.
We did. Me and my ex did a TED talk called "Queer Vision of Love and Marriage." Please check it out. Shameless plug.
It's good.
It's still beautiful. It's really good. It's really good. But like a year later, everything had just went to crap. And so so it's really hard. I can't go into a whole lot of details, but I will say this. For queer people, LGBT people, it is just so important when we are making our families that we have all of our documentation together, contracts, you know, adoptions, on the birth certificate, like know your rights, know what laws are going to protect you wherever you are in the world. It's so, so, so important. We have to do our due diligence to make sure legally we are our child's parent.
Legally, legally. Yeah, because like you said, the person you marry is not the person you divorce. And you would never, ever, 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 when you're in love with this person, think that they could go in a different direction or a hurtful direction. But it happens, right?
Yeah, it happens. And for me, particularly as a transgender person, you know, I have to trust my cis partner to protect my fatherhood and to be in allyship with my parenthood.
Man, you are in it. But I remember, I mean, I just re-listened to your very first episode and all the love you put into creating that baby and all the thought and effort and everything that you put into making this baby, that baby is 100% yours. And so
that's my baby.
I know.
100%. She even acts like me.
God, we're all pulling for you. We're all pulling. We know how much you are your child's father. So we're going to pull for you and make sure you get that custody. But dang. Get it all buttoned up, folks. That's the name of the game here.
Yeah.
Get it buttoned up. So, I think we should segue into the guest we're going to introduce. This interview was fucking bomb. Okay, Teague, let me tell you.
Tell me.
Dr. Gwen Bass. Okay, so here's the thing. This is like full circle queer story. Gwen was conceived in the 80s to lesbian parents by secret artificial insemination. And after like Gwen was like in her 30s, she discovered that the doctor who inseminated her parents used the same donor for many other couples, lesbian and not. And now she has almost a dozen siblings, at least, and is forging new relationships with them and is getting to know all these new siblings.
Wow.
But then that's not all. Hold on. She wrote a book about that whole thing. It's called Immaculate Misconception. So everybody's going to have to get that book and read it. But also, she's a queer mom now. Like, this is full circle queer family journey. And it's good.
Super queer.
All right. So I basically just gave the whole episode away. But Teek, I wanted you to know. Do you know who Helen and Beulah are, Teek?
Who?
They actually don't exist. They're my fake assistants that have been with us since season 3. Actually, Beulah came last season. Beulah is now Helen's girlfriend. Helen is very crotchety. Lesbian, doesn't like to do any kind of work, but Helen rolls the tape for us. So we have to tell Helen to roll that tape. So I'm just going to ask Helen kindly, Helen, can you please roll the tape? Please roll the tape, Helen. Thank you.
Love that your imaginary assistant has an imaginary
girlfriend. I'm still Teek doing everything. Still don't have a fucking assistant, but here we are. Yeah. Helen and Beulah, please roll that tape. Wait, Helen, stop. Before you roll that tape, I need to mention one thing. I have to mention Patreon. If you all like this show and you want to keep hearing these super important LGBTQIA+ family stories, you can help. You can join my Patreon community. I've got various tiers on the page starting at just $2 a month. You're going to do a good thing and you're going to get bonus content like videos of most episodes dropped a day early, crazy behind the scenes shenanigans of yours truly trying to get it together, and anything else I can think of to keep you all entertained and engaged. You're just going to head to patreon.com/thequeerfamilypodcast to join. And a huge, 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 huge thank you to all you Patreons who are already supporting this show. It means the world to me. I couldn't do it without you. Thank you so much. Okay. All right. Helen and Beulah, please roll that tape.
Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
Hi, Gwen.
Hi.
It's nice to have you here. It's actually really awesome to have you here. I'm super excited for this interview to hear your story.
Thanks. Thanks a lot. I'm looking forward to trying to share it.
Oh, my God. It's going to be great. It's going to be great. So without further ado, let's jump right into your elevator pitch so everybody at home can know without me butchering why you're here, and what you're going to be talking about today.
All right.
Are you ready? On your mark, get set, go.
All right. I'll start now and work backwards. Mm-hmm. I just recently wrote a book about my experiences growing up. I was born through artificial insemination in the early 1980s. Before that was a thing. So my parents found a doctor who was like, I will inseminate you on the QT, but I will not tell anyone that this happened. There's no record. It's just cash. Don't talk about this again. So they thought they had a donor that was all anonymous. He said he had like people who were donating in the community, mostly medical students from the place across the street. They told all their friends, they were like, hey, you know, we found this guy. So there was this like lesbian community in Michigan in the early 80s who started having babies inseminated through this doctor. I grew up with not two moms because that like wasn't a thing. It was like a mom and like another lady roommate vibe. So my other parent, who I still think of as a parent and is a parent, wasn't called a mom. She was called an other parent. Oh, so she had a son from a previous marriage to a man, and I grew up with him. And then kind of like grew up like as the first of my kind in a lot of different ways. I ended up coming out later, which we can talk about. I can't fit it into my 90 seconds, but kind of defying the stereotype, like after sort of attempting to defy the stereotype that gay parents make gay kids, which was hard to overcome.
Yeah.
And had my own family, got gay married, had 3 kids through adoption, was a foster parent, got gay divorced, now have a partner and sort of her child. So we're this funky blended family of 4 kids. And yeah. Did I mean
you did great. Technically it's 30 seconds, but you have so much.
I thought I had 90. I didn't even get to the part about how I found my sibling.
Oh my God, I know.
This is hard.
We have so much to unpack here, Gwen. I'm not even listen, you deserved all the time in the world. But now we need to go a little deeper. So let's take it. We're gonna take it all the way back to when Gwen was just a little teeny beady thought in your parents' heads. Take us to that.
So it's funny, you know, I was talking to my brother about it the other day, and my parents were like this funny balance of like wanting, to, I mean, super heteronormative in their relationship, which I think was probably pretty common at the time. Mm-hmm. And also like really social activists and really involved in the gay rights, you know, movement. But it's funny, like they were Boy Scout troop leaders for my brother. And they were like, we got this, like women can do this. And so they taught his like entire troop to sing "You Light Up My Life" in sign language. And, like, all these other families like showed up with like soapbox derby cars and like firefighting badges. And I was like, that must have been so embarrassing.
That was a lesbian troop. That was a lesbian troop.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they weren't fully out, right, to the community?
Right. So they were, I mean, I think they were out, like, you know, they had a community of friends. They were out with like people, you know, in the community. But there was a lot of pressure for Judith, especially because she was sort of more the breadwinner, to be closeted at work. Yeah. And she had like a pretty big job. And interestingly enough, the day I was born, she was due to deliver a keynote speech on infant mental health. And she couldn't say that she had a baby.
Oh, God.
So she's like left the hospital to go give this speech and couldn't tell anyone like, hey, I have an infant, because there was no way for them to understand how that could possibly be.
Right. No, totally. I mean, things have changed, but I have to say things have not changed that much, because my first kid, my wife gave birth, right? And my job, I worked with kids, was my job. I taught dance to kids. And I was absent the day my daughter was born. And then, you know, they're asking, where were you? Where were you? Where were you? And I didn't know how to explain. I have a baby now, but no, I wasn't, you know, like, so it was like this, it's still freaking awkward, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because we're not fully out. We're still not fully out in our places of business, because there is still taboo. But
absolutely,
I can only imagine your parents, like what they went through. And that's just crazy.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
So when they found this guy, I mean, it's funny, like the doctor's name is Dr. Taylor. And I mentioned that because I talked to him when I was like in my early 20s. I was like, I got to call this guy. Like, at some point I might, I don't even know what I want from him. Like, right. He said he didn't keep any records, but like at some point, you know. And what he had told my parents at the time was, the technology is available. Like, who am I to deny people access to it? Mm-hmm. But they certainly were pretending to not be a couple. And all of their friends who subsequently inseminated through him were also sort of like single women.
They were all like Kate and Allie's, just roommates, totally. Living together.
Kate and Allie. 100%. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
They're all gay. Let's be real. Come on.
I know. Everyone. Well, no, it's funny that you say that. And this is totally tangential. But like when I was a kid, like I remember my parents would have like election party, you know, like people would come over and I'd be like watching the election. And they'd be like, Gwen, which of the newscasters? And it would be like a man and a woman, right? Which is the butch and which is the femme? And I'd be like, that guy seems like he might be the femme. Like, but like that was the culture that I grew up, you know, at home.
It's fucking awesome, right? It's fucking awesome. I love that. But yeah. Okay. So. Just to wrap my head around it, this doc, your moms were Kate and Allie-ing it.
Yep.
But the doctor kind of knew that they were a couple, right?
Presumably. No? I don't know. Like, I mean, he didn't like harp on that in any way.
And it was just like, I'm a single, or like, here, I'll help you.
I'm here
lady.
With my friend. I'm going to have a baby.
And he's like, who am I to say you can't? Listen, I got this guy. I have a network of dudes who will donate sperm. Like,
yep. Yep.
Basically,
they're like medical students who work across the street. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of the jam.
You're not the first kid. Well, you're not a kid anymore, but that we talked to Emma, she was in our first season. She was conceived around the same time as you, but in New York, same situation. Medical students at some medical facility here in the city. Same thing.
Yep. I listened to that episode and it's interesting to think about some of the similarities there for sure.
Yeah. Right. Even in different states, you know. Mm-hmm. Okay, so this doctor's like, okay, yeah. So, and then your parents were like, all right, well, we want a donor like so-and-so.
They were like, we want a Jewish donor because my biological mom is Jewish, and we want him to be like tall and athletic because my mom is like short and not athletic.
Right, gotcha.
So he was like, you got it. So they did the insemination. I was born. They like brought me into their like little lesbian community. Everyone was like, oh my gosh, we like my... Now sisters and I joke that I was like the gay bee Jesus, but they were like, oh, there's like some way like this possible.
Oh my God, that might be the name of your episode. I don't know. That's hilarious. That should be the name of your book. Anyway,
I know I really thought about that, but it felt a little like self-aggrandizing in this way that I couldn't quite tolerate.
Yeah, I got you.
But yeah, so my parents told their friends, we left Michigan. Like my family moved away from Michigan. We moved to Massachusetts, where I grew up. My parents separated.
Oh.
Which was really funky because it gave me like, so one of my parents, my non-biological mom moved to Switzerland.
Oh.
Which was like totally wild. So I lived with like a single mom, basically, like in the eyes of it. So I could, it was really easy for me to kind of hide in moments. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'd be like, oh yeah, my mom this. I just live with my mom. And people were like, oh, you must have one of those deadbeat dads. Like, and we've been hearing about those, you know, since the early 80s. We got you. I'm like, it's a little different for me. You know, and my mom was like, she was definitely out. Like, we live in a very progressive community. Like, it was like, you couldn't not know that she was gay. Mm-hmm. And that was like, it just meant that for me, I did a lot of like, yeah, that's my mom's car with all the rainbow stickers. Like, you know, and it wasn't even actually, wasn't even rainbows. It was pink triangles because rainbows weren't even a thing really yet.
Right. Oh my God. You're taking me back. Kate and Allie land. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and it's like Ryan White time and mm-hmm. like just like we were just starting to talk about HIV, Magic Johnson, all
yes.
of that.
Yes. Oh my God. What a time.
And it was interesting because I was like a pretty gender bending kid and was always an athlete and, you know, like grew up with around all these women with like short hair who played sports and like were like, you can be at home. It was sort of like you can be whoever you want. And like there's no such thing as boys' clothes and girls' clothes. And then I would go to school and I'd be like, so not any, there were like no other girls with short hairs, like rocking Jordans. And like, I did have my slap bracelets and I liked girl stuff too, but it was just this really, I was like, this isn't really working.
Hmm.
And then I would go back and forth to Switzerland. And when I was in Switzerland, Judith couldn't say like, oh, that's my daughter. Because like, they'd be like, where the hell has she been the rest of the year? You know?
Right, right. So, and then there's such a stigma placed on moms who aren't with their kid. And
totally. And what was she going to say? She's with my ex-partner, who's a woman. Like, she's with her mom. Right. Like, that was, it just wouldn't have been, it wouldn't have made a lot of sense. So she suddenly turned into my godmother. So I would go, so then it was like this easy cover for me at moments, right? Like of, okay.
But you're raised Jewish, right?
Yeah.
Are there godmothers in, no.
I don't even know. I'm not,
but,
yeah.
Like, this is how we, but this is like, how we bend things.
Not
this is
part
what
of
we
our
do.
Religious. Yeah. No.
We're just like, okay, this is what we're going to do. You're my God kid. And that's totally. Where we're going to go.
So okay. It worked. People was like language people understood. We rolled with it, you know, and then like back in Massachusetts. So I was remembering like I would go to these like summer camps and we just sort of would like act in some ways like Judith was my mom. So like I'd get dropped off at the bus stop to go to summer camp. And they'd be like, you know, who's this weird sort of gender bendery girl? Like, we don't have that here. Like, that's not a thing. And who's, and I like, they were like, oh, say goodbye to your mom. And I was like, she's not my, okay, bye, mom. You know, it's this weird, bizarre way to try to like translate my family into language that people could understand.
Right. But can I ask you, like, how did you feel about your two different parents, right? But you have Judith, who is not biologically connected to you. Then you have your bio mom. Like, how did you feel on the inside about your relationships with them?
So it was really confusing when Judith left. So I mean, there's like a lot, but it was really confusing when Judith left because I was really heartbroken. You know, mm-hmm. it was like a divorce, but my parents were never married. Mm-hmm. My brother stopped living with us at the point.
Oh, so, right. She had a kid.
Yeah. And he actually went to go live with his dad. So it was this, like our family blew up and it was really hard to talk about because people are like, well, that's your mom's partner. That's not your mom.
Right.
And like, why are you so upset about that? Like, that doesn't make sense. Like, he's not really your brother.
They created you together.
Yeah.
Right? Like, basically, they don't. I mean, like, for all intents and purposes, they had sex and made you, damn it. Right?
Yep.
You know?
Yep. Mm. Yeah. So like, we, as a sort of family constellation, understood the significance of what was happening. And there was like a lot there. But it was really hard for me to sort of like explain how, what my connections actually felt like to other people.
Mm-hmm. So but you did have a really, really strong connection to both parents. I ask for my own because I am a bio mom and a non-bio mom to both kids. And I know my kids see me as mom. I know it. But I always lean in a little closer when I speak with somebody who has a bio and a non-bio parent, just because we don't really know what's going on in anybody's head. But I'm just wondering.
Yeah. You know, and temperamentally, I'm much more like Judith than I am like my biological mom.
Hmm.
Lois worked really hard to have a baby. It was really important to her. Like she passed away last year, right around this time.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Thanks. I'm like, I'll get to why I'm okay with it. But I don't mean that in a bad way.
No,
like,
I know.
We really
I know.
Continue,
and I don't mean to laugh through it, but you know, no, laughter is medicine.
Yeah. Totally. But, you know, like I found all these letters that she'd written to her family saying like, hey, we want to have this baby and we just need to know, like, are you going to push us out of the family? Like, we want this kid to have access. Like, she's not going to have any access to her paternal side. So we want her to have access to my side. Like, you know, yeah. So how are you going to handle it? And there's all this back and forth between her parents and her sisters and her being like, we'll support you, but we think what you're doing is really wrong. Like, it's really fascinating. God. And eventually they were all fine and it was okay. And I feel very connected to that side of my family. But I say that because I think about how intensely righteous my parents had to be. And I think especially Lois, like my biological mom, was like very like, I want a baby. And like to then have that baby. And I think my mom was like, oh, I love you. And this is what like having a baby is like. And that's really overwhelming for me as a human. Like,
yeah,
both of those things were true. And I think sometimes, like I remember in college when I came across this like term around goodness of fit in parenting and like this idea, like how temperamentally parents and children are sort of matched. I was like, we just weren't a great fit. Like, so for my mom to end up single parenting me, it was like a lot for her. And right. So, you know, I don't feel like I was like super parentified as a kid. But it was like, I was really independent. And like, I mean, like I was listening to some of the other episodes you had of like Queer Spawn. It is real when you grow up in, and I'm sure it's true for your kids too. Like when you grow up in a queer family, like you're growing up in a queer community. And like, it is like, I still, like we joke, I have one of my mom's best friends. We joke that she was actually my sperm donor. Cause we're like, so like similar. So we go places and she's like, hi, I'm Gwen, sperm donor. It's nice to meet you.
Oh, that's my favorite thing. That's amazing.
Queer Family Podcast.
All right, folks. I don't know about all of you, but it is a new year and I have got goals for this new year. Like, for instance, I need to get a dog trainer so my dog can stop chewing all my children's toys because it's becoming a nightmare. But in order for me to get that dog trainer, I need to consolidate some of my credit card debt. And a lot of y'all might be in the same boat. You might want to make a baby this year. You might want to buy a new home. I don't know. And you might have some credit card debt. So if one of your goals this year is to take control of your credit card debt, it's February. Now is the time to start. We all start the new year ready to make big changes in our lives, right? But it can be tough to keep the momentum going. So one way to get ahead is by consolidating your credit card debt and paying a low fixed rate loan instead. And LightStream makes this process possible. A credit card consolidation loan from LightStream can help you pay off your credit cards and lock in a low fixed interest rate. Rates start at 7.99% APR with autopay and excellent credit. Plus, the rate is fixed, so it will never go up over the life of the loan. And you can get a loan from $5,000 to $100,000, and there are absolutely no fees. This is great. This is great for those of us who have goals but don't know how to get there, right? And just for my listeners here, you can apply now to get a special interest rate discount and save even more. The only way to get this discount is to go to lightstream.com/OCT. That's LightStream.com/OCT. Disclaimer, subject to credit approval. Rates range from 7.99% APR to 23.99% APR and include a 0.5% autopay discount. Lowest rate requires excellent credit. Terms and conditions apply and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/OCT for more information. Do it.
Love is love is love is love.
So I spent a lot of time like in being raised by like a lot of people and that really diffused some of the dynamic between my mom and I, but it wasn't always easy between us. Mm. And so I felt it was hard to like not be parented more frequently by the parent who I was closer to, sort of in temperament. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and your parents are not alone in that reality. I think it's a rude awakening for all of us when we become parents.
100%. And in some ways, having the relationship I did with Judith really translated like so naturally to the kind of relationship you have with your kids as adults. Like we didn't have to skip a beat because we were always like, I'll see you, I'll hang out with you when we're together. And when we're apart, we used to talk every Sunday. I have actually pictures of myself like sitting on the phone, you know, like as a little kid, like on Sundays we used to talk.
And you're still close with your brother and you call him your brother.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. And you guys are still tight.
Yeah. You know, we see each other not very often, but we're, you know, we feel really close, I think. Mm-hmm. And every time we hang out, I'm like, it's really mind blowing how like we only overlapped for like 6 years of childhood. but like sharing our parents and that experience for me is like I see him like engage in the world and I'm like, oh my God, like, I don't know how we turned out with like exact same values. You know, like we embody right. them very differently. You know, we're really different people, but we're really like, there's like this deep, like, oh, we like stemmed from the same place, you know?
Yeah. Huh. That's so amazing. And you said that Lois passed away recently.
Yeah. So actually right around the time that she was starting to decline, my other mom, or I now call her my other mom because we have like language for that, Judith, was like, hey, there are all these people from Ann Arbor where you were conceived who are friends of ours back then, whose kids actually kind of like look like you. And they all did ancestry and a lot of them are related. And I was like, oh, and I like looked at some of their pictures online and I was like, there's no way that we're not related. My God. So I went on ancestry and found, I think there are like 10 or 11 of us.
That are related through the same donor.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. And about 8 of those people, like maybe like 6 of them all grew up and we didn't know. So like I used to, in true gay fashion, go to the women's final four for basketball every year.
Of course I did. Atta girl. Yeah.
I still have like so much of the swag and shit. I can't, it's so embarrassing. But we used to go every year. My mom, Lois, and I used to go with my sister, Ann Lynn, and her two moms. We didn't know we were related. We just oh yeah, like, it's good to see you every year kind of thing.
Because it was your gay community friends. Like, that totally. Was the other two mom kid, right? Like,
yep. And it wasn't until we got much older that, like, you can't deny the resemblance. But when we were little, it was, like, not.
And the parents didn't see it. They never saw it. They never put two and two together.
Yeah, I think there was, like, a lot of speculation. Some of it, I think, has to do with, like, their protection of maybe, like, wanting mm-hmm. to not. Yeah, just like keep things close.
Yeah, hold the family unit together and not like blow it all up too much. So can we unpack that? Like, what happened then? How did this happen? Let's talk about that.
Yeah, so one of my siblings' parents visited Judith and her partner. And they were like, this girl looks so much like you. Like the whole time she was talking, we couldn't stop staring at her because we were like, you're like just like one. So they sent me this ancestry kit. And they were like, you know, do the test. So I did the test. Ancestry sent my kit back and was like, sorry, it didn't work. Like, here's another test. Try again. And I was like, I don't know. Maybe I just don't even care. Like, it doesn't, mm-hmm. like, it just felt like maybe it's a sign. I don't need to follow this path. 3 times I had to submit myself to Ancestry.
Oh, wow.
Eventually I connected with this sibling, Ann Lynn, who I knew that I had, like, the final four sibling. And a couple of others. And then there were a few that we didn't know and who have like wildly different stories. So like one of my siblings didn't know she was the product of an insemination.
Oh, straight family?
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, and in the same way that my Dr. Taylor had said to my parents, like, you want a Jewish athletic doctor? You got it. They were like, you want an Egyptian guy? You got it. You know, like,
oh my God.
One other family was like, yeah, we want a tall blonde guy. You got it. Like, no problem.
Like, but it was all the same guy.
It was all the same guy. So we kind of connected. And I remember sort of like being in this moment of like, I've spent my whole life figuring out how to like orient around my identity and like figure mm-hmm. out who I am. And mm-hmm. so many paradoxes in my life of like single parent, gay family, but two moms, but not two moms. Like there was an income disparity. There was like countries between which I tried. Like it was such a weird existence mm-hmm. that I was like, okay, I got it all figured out. I know who I am. Like, I don't need to like, you know, I don't want to hear too many stories about the, like, I don't know. Like, maybe these people are weird. Like, I have no idea. And then I'm going to be like, oh, I come from weird people and right. I don't think I did. So it's, I'm good. Like, I've got it. He's my nice Jewish doctor dad. I'm good.
And as far as you know, you were the only one. He only right. donated once.
Yeah. And somehow it like hadn't really occurred to me that I'd have siblings. I was, no, maybe it's no. like, really, I was like, it's just me. Just
right. You would think so though. Right. I don't yeah. know. Oh my God. It's like so many things. Okay. All right. Yeah, so
it felt like a one-off in a clinic, like this guy just being like, hey, Lois, I'll help you out. But, you know,
it was the same dude.
So we connected. We started like WhatsApp chatting. I'm like, these people are really cool. And then a handful of us sort of like flipped over and started using a video messaging app. So like, I mean, there are like hours of video and audio of like us being like, and what was your experience like with this thing? And like, do you feel like this? And, you know, and just like funny stories and like the most kismet connection. It was just wild.
Wow. Wow. So you have a lot in common and it seems like there was a lot to unpack together, like a lot of wanting to feel kind of like a sameness or a community in experience somewhat.
Yeah. And I think so many of us had felt like there's no one else who could possibly get this. Like, because we really were. I mean, this was like, I think, I want to say the cryobank in California started offering inseminations to lesbians in like 85 or something. Yeah. So this was like, I mean, right after they were requiring psychovals for women who wanted to inseminate, and like just after homosexuality came out of the DSM. Like, it was really like, and if most people were doing it through like a friend of a friend kind of thing.
Yeah.
But
known donor type situations.
Yeah. Yeah.
And of course, HIV and AIDS was like rampant and all the gays' fault. And
totally.
So there was such a stigma.
Such a stigma. Mm. Yeah. You know, and it's funny, like, most of them didn't have this experience. I really grew up, like, because my mom was such an activist, I'd spend my weekends like at these panels and I'd be like, no, it's fine. Gay, you know, like 9 years old, 10 years old, sitting on these panels telling people that like I was okay and they could too have children and their kids would turn out okay. And like people would invite me into their graduate school classes to be like, look at this 12 year old.
You're like a poster. You were the poster child.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're not the only one. Like, yeah. That's, and well, what was that like for you? Like, did that damage you in any way? Like, how do you feel about that overall experience?
Well, what's really interesting, and I think kind of bringing it back to your question about like kind of finding connection with these, with my siblings, I really rejected, like as gay as I am, I like really rejected being a spokesperson. So like, I mean, I'll go to pride rallies and stuff like that, but like, I'm not going to like carry any signs. Like, that's just never been my jam in my adulthood because I didn't have a choice when I was a kid. Mm. And I think like some of that for me was like, I need to like reject that kind of being gay. Like, I just want to be a normal person. And I think so much of my childhood was about like, how do I fit in and be normal? Because my family is so not.
Right.
You know, and I couldn't answer questions. Like, people would be like, oh, so like, what do your parents do? And I'm like, well, I know that you mean mom and dad when you say parents. And like, now I have to give you a lesson on where I came from. Ugh. And it's like the preschool rug. And like, maybe you've never heard of a vagina or like sperm. And like, this is so awkward. And the teachers would be like, that's fine. Gwen, just tell him. And I was like,
I know.
I can see it's making you uncomfortable. I was like, I don't know what to say. You know, and actually the book I just wrote is freight, like every chapter is a question that I experienced. Like, you know, a lot of people would ask me like, are you going to be gay because your parents are, you know, and, you know, like, what do your parents do or where are you from? Or do you have any siblings or things like that, that were really like simple things that I just couldn't.
They're not simple answers.
Yeah. So in each of the chapters, I sort of unpack my relationship to those questions and sort of what was actually happening behind the scenes for me. But I think that since finding my siblings, I've felt enough of a community in them to be able to go back and be like, okay, I actually have this story that's like pretty wild that I can share, because I don't, which feels in some ways like a move in the direction of activism that I wouldn't have taken, I don't think, had I not connected with them.
Interesting. And your book, tell us what your book is about.
Yeah. So it really is, it's basically every chapter sort of starts with a question that I was asked and kind of gives, like, I did what I could to sort of set a scene. So like, you know, I talk about this one instance in preschool where the teacher's like, hey, you know, we're getting ready to do our holiday crafts. Like, tell me who's in your family so I can give you the supplies you need. And it turned into like me giving my entire class a lesson on like artificial insemination, how yes, no, I didn't have a dad. And like all the internal experiences I had of being like, can somebody just get like Sophie to start talking about her rock collection again?
Right.
Because like, I don't want to do this anymore. You know, and I grew up in a community where like kind of everything about our differences needed to be honored. And so, you know, like my mom, like I said, was really super out and I was really gender bendy and she was really protective. And so I remember like walking into schools and having people like kind of give me a weird look and knowing that my mom was like seeing that and wanting to be like, no, it's okay. I got this. Like, I'm going to be fine. You know? Mm. So I talk about a lot of those experiences that I had as a kid and the narratives that I received from my family about like how, again, like how okay it was to be me, how like the sort of strength and connection and sort of reflection from the queer community that I grew up in was like really powerful to be like, look, all these people are like living happy, normal lives. Like, yes, they're like in gay relationships, but they like, you know, they have the same shit as everyone else, like good, bad, ugly, whatever, you know, like, and so I think for me, that was like really validating in terms of being able to sort of just be the kind of kid I was.
Right. I love that. And you bring up a good point. We're totally the same. We're completely the same. We all have our shit, but also we're
so different.
Right.
It's funny when I first, so, you know, before I like met any of my siblings, I started, you know, internet stalking them like anyone would.
As you do.
I mean, and I was like, oh, she does kind of look like me in that picture. Like, oh, I think we have the same profile. And like, oh, she's into this. A bunch of us are like business owners. One of them had this podcast and I was like, oh my God, I got to listen to it. And like, as she was talking, I was like, I could be like, that's exactly how I would have delivered that sequence of like, holy I would have shit. Said that in the exact same way. Same laugh, like all this weird stuff where I was like, that is really weird.
Wow. It is crazy. And it's, as a non-bio mom, it is scary for me to think that, but also awesome. Like it's scary and awesome at the same time, because it's scary for me to think that actually as a gay mom, that my kids might pick up all a bunch of these characteristics of this person I've never met. But it's also awesome to think that my daughter, who I didn't give birth to, could quite possibly pick up my characteristics, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I have three kids who I adopted. And certainly right. there are questions for me, like, or have been over the, like, how much contact is okay with their biological families? And like, I think any adoptive parent has questions about like fearing rejection if your mm-hmm. kids connect with their bio families. And I actually work with a lot of adoptive families to talk about that. But finding my siblings, I'm like, oh, it's not a threat. It's just like another, it's just an expansion like, for me. And I think it might not be the same for everyone, but.
Right. But I feel like for our families, especially, like we come in so many different ways that it's really great if we can learn to kind of embrace the whole picture. And but that's not for everybody. And you are correct in that. Did you ever try to find the donor?
So, you know, there's like the offspring registry, which started. There are ways to try to connect. And at one point in my 20s, I think when I was like thinking about starting my own family, I was like, I should just make sure I'm not like genetically predisposed to something terrible.
Right.
But it was kind of a lost cause because this was such a weird situation.
Right.
So I did call Dr. Taylor at one point when I was in my 20s and, you know, had no luck with those offspring registries. And I just said, hey, you know, like, what do you know? And he said, I didn't keep any records because I felt sort of the moral obligation to offer the inseminations, but the donors wanted to be anonymous. The women didn't want the donors to find them for obvious reasons, mm-hmm. given what was going on legally at the time. And I didn't want to be holding information that I couldn't share. So I like literally don't know who goes with who.
I wonder how he feels about that now.
Yeah.
I wonder.
One of my sisters, my podcast sister, did an episode where she interviewed him. And oh. he basically says the same thing. He doesn't talk about how he felt about it, but he just sort of has this parting line of like, the technology was available. I wasn't going to stop it. I wasn't going to stand in the way, but like,
a
I'm
very
not like
science-y
an advocate.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Right. Interesting. Totally. Huh. Maybe he doesn't have any feelings about it. Maybe. Who knows? But
who knows? So, you know, as my sisters and I are like putting together, like, well, I thought he was Egyptian. I thought he was a Jewish guy. Like my parents said he was blonde. Like, you know. We're like, there's something going on here.
He is the unicorn of men. That's
and we had
is.
Like very little to go off of. So we're like, we went through like every medical student graduating class of like every local college. We're like looking through their alumni photos. We're like, do we have this guy's ears? Like, do you think it's him? Like that guy when he takes a bite of the salad in that picture? Did you?
Yeah. Is that my earlobe?
Totally. And there are a couple of things about us that are all really similar. Like we have really similar eyes. We have very similar jawline. And it's kind of like distinct to mm-hmm. us in this way that, you know, we were like, oh, we narrowed it down and we'd be like sending pictures around. Like, do you think it's him? And then my oldest sister connected with these people called the Angels on Facebook. And they are, I think, Mormons. Who are really interested in genealogy.
Right.
And so
yeah,
you uh-huh. just like give them your info and they'll basically tell you if you're being saved as like coming. But really,
right.
what they're trying to do is connect, you know, connect your whole genealogy. So
and then convert you.
Yeah, exactly. Within a week, they found the donor who wasn't a doctor or a tall blonde guy, or Egyptian or Jewish or any of those things. He worked for General Motors and we came to find out later, had put his wife through nursing school by uh-huh. donating. And Dr. Oh. Taylor knew him because he and his wife had a viable pregnancy at the clinic. And that was one of the only things that Dr. Taylor, he was like, everybody who I'm using has, you know, has conceived a child.
Like, I want to know, I want to be a fly on the wall for the conversation that happened between Dr. Taylor and the donor.
Right. Like, hey, man, you looking
yeah,
for a little
like,
extra
hey,
cash? Like,
yeah. You looking
babies.
For some money?
Can you come here a sec? Yeah. Yeah.
Like, how did that yeah. connection even happen? Because you don't have conversations like that when you go to the OBGYN. And also, I don't know if he was even at the appointment. Like, there's so much going through my head.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So you found him. And then what do you do with it?
So right as we found him, and we found out a lot about our genealogy, like he's Hispanic, which we were like, oh, that's interesting. Uh-huh. And, you know, like there's a lot of family medical history that was really complicated. So he had deceased. He actually died on my wedding day, like the year I was married, which is so bizarre. Like, I'm like, that was like a really big universal astrological day.
Holy shit.
So he had died like probably 10 years before we found him. And it was this really weird thing because we all, you know, we found out who he was and that he was no longer in like the same breath. And I remember we all hopped on this like Zoom call. There were like probably 8 or 9 of us on there. And it was this interesting moment of being like, hey, this happened. And also he's dead. And also his family doesn't know that we exist.
So
he has children who he and his wife raised who don't know that he, who presumably don't know that he also was donating sperm. And so there was like, we all had this, it was one of the moments when I was like, there's like some deeper connection that we all have, because the way that we were able to all sit in a room and have this conversation and everyone was like, kind of like honored where everyone else was with it. Like there was this weird, like sort of somberness to the whole thing and excitement and like, now we have a picture of what he looks like, which we'd never had, any of us, and all of us have been curious about that. And even if none of us really, and I don't think anyone was like, oh, I'm dying to meet him. I think we all had the same, like, I just want to see what he looked like.
Right. Interesting. That's interesting.
Yeah. And I think finding each other, at least for me, and I think for some of them would say too, was like, we know who he was because we know who we are as a group. Like, we know what we have in common, and that clearly came from him. And so we kind of talked about it. And we were like, do we tell this family? Do we not? And it sort of ended on this really respectful moment of like, listen, everybody needs to be in whatever process they need to around this. Like, you do what you need to do, but like, this is where I stand. And so we decided not to talk to his kids. I mean, we've since done like a couple of podcast interviews and things where I'm like, I don't know, could they find out? Like, we've used his first name. We've let, you know, but we've tried to be generally respectful. But there was also this huge medical issue. So like a bunch of us had to go get genetic testing to make sure, because he died young, his sister died young, his mom died young. There was all this
oh shit, maybe
he's like not,
shit, that's like, fuck.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, we're all good, which is good, but.
Oh, good. Yeah. Okay, great. So it wasn't passed down.
Yeah.
Wow. It's a lot.
It's a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. That's why you had to write a book.
That's why I had to write a book about it.
Then that's why all of us listening at home need to get this book and read the book. But you also have a queer family building journey that we have not even touched upon. Mm-mm. So let's go into that. So first of all, you mentioned earlier that you did feel kind of a pressure to not come out as gay, having two moms. Let's talk about that. And then how did that come out?
So I remember like so distinctly driving in the wintertime with my mom, and it was like super icy. We were stuck in a ton of traffic. And I was like, this is my moment. I was like, I need to tell you something, but I want you to not say anything back. And she was like, is everyone safe? Like, my mom's a social worker. She was like, is anybody being hurt? Like, I was like, just don't do the thing. Like, I'm 5. I need to tell you this thing. And I was like, I think I'm gay. And
she was like,
5.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And she was like, I think you've just been around a lot of lesbians. And I was like, I thought about that.
Right.
But I think I'm actually gay. And she was like, listen, like, you can have short hair and be an athlete and like not be gay. Like, that's fine. Like, you don't have to be gay just because, you know, that's what you're seeing. And I remember being like this, you know, like feeling her internalized homophobia in that moment of like, oh God, I can't. I mean, and also like, it's a legitimate thing to say to a 5-year-old, like, I'm not saying you can't be gay, but like, you might not be because you don't really know a lot of other ways of being.
Right. Right.
You know, like most of your world is at our house. So I could get that, you know, and then I spent my teenage years actively not being gay, like working really hard at that. You know, with my first year of college, I remember I was like, I'm not even going to tell anyone that my parents are gay. I'm just going to like wear a lot of makeup and like pretend to be really girly.
You're going
to
wear really frilly ribbons in your softball hair, ponytail. Totally.
It lasted like 5 minutes. And I was like, that's actually not me. You know, and I kind of like reverted to the mom godmother paradigm because I was like, then I don't have to talk about my gay parents. And like, it had been such a defining thing about me throughout my entire childhood that I just like needed a break from it. And then, you know, after like probably 6 months into my first year of college, it was like, when like, who the fuck are you kidding? Like, you're gay is gay. Like, stop. So I remember coming out to my parents again. And Judith was like, oh, I guess gay parents do make gay kids. And I was like, can you not say that? Like,
that's exactly what you're not supposed to say, Judith. So funny.
But by then, I feel like so much had shifted in the movement anyway. Like, I felt safe coming out and, you know, acknowledging who I was. And it was my parents were obviously fine with it. But it took me a long time to get there.
So interesting, right? Homophobia, internalized homophobia, it runs deep, man. It really does.
Yeah.
Even when you're immersed in it, right?
Totally. And even now still. So like you asked me about my kids, one of them identifies as non-binary. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, we're like three gender. Like, I'm like, oh, damn it. Like, I'm really, and not that I need my kids to all like, you know, I certainly don't want them to take on my own internalized homophobia, right, but I'm like, it really is a thing. And even in sharing my story and sort of being more out in public about the fact that like, I'm from, you know, gay parents as a gay person, I'm like, I like every time I write something about it or post on social media, like it hits a shame button for me of like, you did something that we were trying to prove that wasn't going to happen, you know?
Yeah. Right. All right. So talk about it. So you come out.
So I came out in college and then I like, and then I was like, captured the rugby team. Like I was like, went,
you
for
went
it.
Hard.
I was like,
you
all gay hard. All the time. Yeah. And then I got married. And prior to getting married, I was a foster parent. And when my then, I guess, fiance, we're together, my ex-wife and I were together. I was like, listen, I've always wanted to be a foster parent. So I'm going to do this thing. If you want to do it too, that's great. If you don't, that's fine too. Like, you know, we were in our early 20s. Like when I think about it, I'm like, wow, that was like,
what
I started fostering when I was like 24 or 5.
What compelled you to want to be a foster parent? So young, really. And like,
yeah, I don't know. Like, I've always had this really funny thing. And maybe it's just because as a kid, I was an only child in this weird situation where I was like, I get weird situations for kids. I could help kids in hard situations. Like, and so I've always been really involved in like early childhood education. Like, I've learned a lot about child development. Like, my work now is really focused on education and counseling and things like that with kids. But I don't know. It always was something I wanted to do. And so we fostered a bunch of kids. And then eventually, right, you know, around the time that we got married, we had taken in a kid who was supposed to stay for 2 months. And she was 8 weeks old when she came to live with us. And, you know, by that point.
8 weeks?
Yeah.
And oh, wow.
So, yeah. So she was 8 weeks old, 2 months in, they were like, she's not going to be reunified. Do you want to adopt her? And she was like, just the best. And we were like, yeah. You know, and we had recently had an experience with a kid because we were trying to be like, we're fostering, but also we're in our early 20s. So we took one placement. We were like, we can take this kid for 6 months, but then we're going to Costa Rica to like, travel, like just be young for a minute.
We're still babies, right? Ourselves.
And we'd had this moment with this kid where we were like, oh, he could have been in our forever family. Like we just had such a sweet bond with him that it felt like disruptive to that. I don't know. I was like, we can't do this again unless we're sure that if the right kid came along, we could say yes.
And that's the thing with fostering. Yeah. You have to have a strong heart, right? Mm-hmm. It can be tough.
Yeah. So when Matea came home, it was like a no-brainer. And so she's now 13, almost 14. And I never really wanted to adopt. I was like, I wanted to have my own biological kids. I felt really strongly about it, only having connection to one side of my own family.
So you wanted to have a child that had a same biological connection as you.
Yeah, I really wanted to. And I want to carry a child. I was like really committed to that. But then we had Matea and I was like, oh, like she's amazing. Like I couldn't imagine like loving a kid more, feeling more connected to her. Like I definitely feel like her parent. She definitely feels like my child. And then I thought like, all right, well, if we're going to have, and we were young. I was like, if we're going to have biological kids, let's like adopt one more so that they have a shared experience around being adopted. And then so we adopted my son, Michael, who came home at like 2 days old. And he's now 11.
And what kind of adoption did you do?
We adopted through foster care.
Oh, okay.
Yep. So, which can be really messy. Like we kind of initiated like that we wanted to adopt a second child. We were really specific. We were like, we'll only take a situation that's like this, that, and the other. And figuring we'd wait like months and months and months. And very quickly, this perfect situation just sort of came up and Michael came home.
Wow. That's
but it
beautiful.
Was like one of those, like, it's 9 a.m. and I'm like, I get a call that I don't return till noon. And then they're like, do you want to come pick up your son in 2 hours or should we pass him on to someone else? And I was like, no.
Holy shit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. And there's a lot of kids who need homes. Mm-hmm. And it's, God.
I think, you know, like there's always that question, like kind of the elephant in the room, I think for most people is like, what am I taking on by adopting a kid? Mm-hmm. And I don't know their family history. And like, what if they have predispositions to things I don't know about? And I'm like, I don't know half my biological history.
Right.
And the part that I do know about my maternal side certainly isn't a great case for like mental health or like, I mean, like we're like my genes aren't that much better. Like, I can't make any promises. So we went for it. And then 4 months later, it was like, so Michael's biological mom is pregnant with another baby. Are you interested? And Matea's biological mom was also pregnant with another baby. And they were like, were you interested? So we were like, went in this and strange, like in a crazy one window of time, there was 4 months when we had adopted Matea, had adopted Michael, were fostering Michael's younger brother because their case was more complicated. So my child, Jonah, we've adopted since. So Michael and Jonah share a biological family and Matea has her own biological family. But Matea's biological siblings came to live with us too. So we had five kids. So we're like, we fostered them.
And you're still in your 20s.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, oh, I guess maybe I was 30 then.
I can't even.
It was bananas. We had five kids under five. It was like running a group home for toddlers. It was really intense. And what Matea's biological siblings had experienced was really complicated. Mm. And so they presented with like a lot of need. They ended up being adopted by another family who the kids now have contact, and it's really sweet.
Oh, that's good. Okay.
Yeah. And then my marriage was ending. So it's like, I'm not going to be adopting any more children right now.
Oh shit. Wait. Oh my God. The story, the plot thickens. Okay. Keep going. Just keep telling the story.
So now I have like a 7, 5, and 4-year-old, I think. Yeah. Mm-hmm. My partner and I separate. And then I started dating my current partner, and she had a 3-year-old at the time, and she was single parenting her daughter. So it was funny. Like last year, I had it was just me and the four kids on the beach, and we were just chatting. And I was like, I don't think I was reading this book, Normal Family. Have you read it?
No.
Krista Bilton, I think is her name. And she wrote this book about her experience finding her donor siblings. And I was like reading this book, and I was like, hey guys, like, I don't think I've ever been in a situation like this, but like none of us grew up with our biological dads. All of us have siblings we don't live with because my partner's daughter has kids from her dad's side. But like, how often can you say that like you're in a room or like in a space with people who all have like those things in common that are so oddly uncommon?
It's the new traditional family. Yeah. There you go. New traditional right here.
Yep. Yeah.
Holy shit.
So it's wild. So we have like a mix of like races and we have a mix of biological and non-biological and
it's beautiful.
Yeah, it is.
And do you still share custody with your ex?
Yep. So we have like, it, you know, and that's hard, right? Like, and for the way that we've worked it out, it's really actually nice. Like they get time with their other mom. We split 50-50. And my partner's daughter goes back and forth between our house and her grandma's because they're really close. And so when Liz and I want to hang out and go do something just the two of us, it's usually really easy to get away. So that's like really nice balance. When people are like, oh my God, you have four kids. Like, that's insane. I'm like, it is like 80% of the time insane. And then there are these like 20% of the time moments where we're like, we're going to go to Spain for the weekend because we just need to get away. And we have
to get time off. Yeah, yeah. And you get time off. Wow. Yeah. Well, I mean, I feel like we've learned a lot in your story here. And I think everybody needs to go out and buy your book. When is your book out?
It will be out in June.
Okay. Well, tell everybody at home how they can contact you, where they can get your book or get info about your book because it's coming out in June.
So you go to my website, which is www.drgwenbass.com, or you can follow me on social media, which is just Dr. Gwen Bass on Instagram and Facebook and LinkedIn. And there'll be like regular messaging coming out as soon as the book's available for pre-order through places like Amazon and things like that.
Exciting. And, you know, thank you so much for sharing your story. You really are a full circle queer story. And it's beautiful. Your family's beautiful. I'm so glad you came on to share. And
thanks so much for having me.
This is not the end. This is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Thank you.
The Queer Family Podcast.
Well, folks, I really hope you enjoyed that episode. I know I did. What a good story. But the conversation is not over, folks. Be sure you're following the show on all the socials. We're on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at the Queer Family Podcast. You're going to get photos of all the guests there, some videos, and just, you know, all around fun from yours truly. Who doesn't want that? Don't miss out. You don't want FOMO. Nobody wants FOMO. And don't forget to join me on Patreon to help me create this super important queer content. You're going to head to patreon.com/thequeerfamilypodcast to sign up and get that bonus content. And one more thing, if you love this show and want to represent your love for us and our beautiful families, you need to head to our shop and get some Queer Family Podcast merchandise. We've got so many designs, and you can put these designs on any product in the store. We've got t-shirts, mugs, hoodies, notebooks, face masks, laptop cases. You're just going to go to tpublic.com and search for the Queer Family Podcast. Or you can find the shop on our website at thequeerfamilypodcast.com. There's so many ways, so many ways. All right, folks, that's it for this week. Tune back in next week for another episode all about family, but with gay.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.